Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 423 for the week of September 5th, 2022. I am white lung survivor David T. Cole, and I'm here with second bell Sarah D. Bunting.
Principal's office, now.
And stern disciplinarian Tara
Ariana. Go right lines.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. I just have to stop. Remember writing lines? Was that a punishment you ever had to do in school? What a stupid thing.
We had a teacher named Mr. West who devised a system. It was called West's Ways Once. Uh-huh. And so instead of writing lines, you had to print it in all caps, and then do cursive, and then repeat that how many times you wanted.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so wow. West Ways Once multiplied by 100 or whatever. Mm.
Sarah looked quizzical, so I'm thinking Sarah was a good girl and she never had to write lines.
I don't know what writing lines is. It's not necessarily because I was a good girl, but...
You know, in The Simpsons, when Bart's at the chalkboard writing the things over and over again?
That.
Oh, that's what that's called? Okay, yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't have to do that.
They just smacked her with a ruler.
Anyway, we're talking teachers. Welcome to Extra Hot Great. It's Teacher Thunderdome. We are in the week of Labor Day. This is traditionally back to school. God, by this time, everyone should be back to school. I realize back to school is a rolling event that starts sometimes in early August and just keeps going. But observing it where it should be observed after Labor Day. Come on now.
Yeah.
We've done this before, so you probably know what's happening, but... To recap, for those who don't, each of us has submitted 9 teacher characters from TV with the following criteria. Number 1, only one character per show across all entries. Number 2, we're interpreting teacher liberally, so that could be coaches, professors, principals, people who work in schools or educational institutions, basically. And while Vanessa from Atlanta, Jesse from the new Saved by the Bell, Tammy Taylor from Friday Night Lights, and Xiomara Villanueva from Jane the Virgin are all educators, they were also in the Mom Thunderdome, so we have excluded them. And we also did a Thunderdome of secondary Beverly Hills 90210 characters on our sister show. Again, with this, we are skipping Mrs. Teasley, the late, great Denise Dowse, for that reason, and also because she won, spoiler, that one, so...
She'll probably win this shit too. Let's face it.
Seriously, her jersey has been retired. So,
So before we get into the matches, just to remind you that the Thunderdome is a competition between 27 people. This time it is TV teachers. They battle in groups of 3. They enter the Thunderdome. That is the geodesic battle dome from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. It is situated way, way, way in the radioactive wastelands of the Australian outback in our terrible new future. 3 enter, only 1 can leave. Some additional information, they cannot leave the Thunderdome once they go. There are a smattering of post-nuclear apocalypse weapons on the walls here and there. The odd, you know, mace, cudgel, maybe you're lucky to find a sword. Generally, they can't bring things in with them, but depends on how crafty they are. You know, exceptions have been made as we have argued it out. We will have 1 wave whittled down to 9, second wave whittled down to 3, and then we'll have our championship battle in the Thunderdome.
The results also have the force of law.
That's right. Yes. Let's get into it with our first matchup. We've got Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights, Coach McGurk from Home Movies, and Nicole Kennedy from Dawson's Creek.
So I put in Coach Taylor, and I'm not a Friday Night Lights viewer, but I just thought as I had 7 out of my 9 entries filled out. But don't put Coach Taylor in there. I know people generally out there will be angry with us. So that's why Coach Taylor is in there. He's the football coach of the Dillon Panthers.
Correct.
Yes.
And he is like, you know, just like super coach, super dad, all things to all people. Mm-hmm. And the second one is Coach McGurk, a different kind of coach. He is yes. the coach of the little of the grade school soccer team in Home Movies, the Squiggle Vision animation from Brendan Small. He is really bad at his job. He doesn't want to be there. He is delinquent in his duties most of the times. But he lets the kids get away with everything. So I suspect the kids sort of enjoy having him as a teacher. Mm-hmm.
And Nicole Kennedy, I had a variety of teachers from whom to choose on Dawson's Creek, but I went with Nicole Kennedy, played by Mechen Amek, who was extremely mean to Dawson in the film class provided at Capeside High School. And for that, she will always be treasured in my heart, at least.
All right. Let's fight. Who wants to go first? Dave?
Okay. Well, I don't think Coach McGurk's going to do very well in the Thunderdome. I love his character a lot, but he is a slovenly, overweight individual. He is every gym coach I ever had in high school, which is beer belly, glory days, well behind, doesn't give a shit about anybody sort of character. They did a good job with his character in the show because he certainly rings true to me. Entering the Thunderdome, I think he probably is the first to go in this matchup. He might even be drunk. He might even walk into that thing totally plastered.
He's drunk or he's hungover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The only thing that could save him is if, like that one episode where they're doing the play in the school, he somehow manages to drive his Trans Am or Thunderbird or whatever it was up onto stage / Thunderdome. But I don't think there's an entrance big enough on Thunderdome to make that happen.
Right.
The one that was complete with the Bryan Adams reckless window decal, that car.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah.
So how mean is Nicole Kennedy? Like, how mean is she?
Pretty mean.
Like, are you scared of her? Like, from after 2 minutes of like knowing her, that kind of mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I think Coach Taylor is a good person, and he obviously knows his football, and he's a physical specimen. But also, I don't know if he has the eye of the tiger when it really comes down to, like, a one-on-one situation.
Right.
Like, the football field is different than the mano-a-mano death throws of the Thunderdome.
That's right.
So I'm inclined to give this one to Nicole Kennedy, even though I don't really know who the hell you're talking about.
I'll go next. I agree with Dave about Coach McGurk. His only advantage here is if he manages to get close enough to someone and then maybe fall on them drunkenly or he trips. one of those situations. So it comes down, again, I agree with Dave, it's Coach Taylor versus Nicole Kennedy. And so the question is, Coach Taylor can coach a team to victory. Can he coach himself? I mean, football is a violent game.
Yeah.
We can agree. But, you know, does he have that killer instinct himself? Do we think of him more as like an effective tactician or, you know, a stern mentor to his players?
Again, don't know too much about Friday Night Lights,
sure,
but
sure.
His power seems to be the power of inspiration.
Yeah. Well, you know, clear eyes, full hearts, etc. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Nicole Kennedy, too. If she's like mean as a snake, I mean, not that it really says that much necessarily to be mean to Dawson. He invites it.
Well,
he's terrible.
That's the thing. Yeah.
But even so, I think Coach is going to have a hard time against someone who, you know, is going to be ready to scratch his or anyone else's eyes out. So I'm giving this one to Nicole Kennedy as well. Sarah.
Me, too. We did not have that much exposure to her, and I think you could make the argument that, well, first of all, if it's like, you know, a teacher of the year competition, Coach Taylor takes it handily,
certainly.
And if it's a psychological warfare competition, I think he also, like, he can withstand the relentless, often withering, usually annoying commentary of a small town in Texas on his performance as the coach, and does so. He has, you know, led teams to victory that were underdogs. Like, that's all great, but this is not a psychological contest. This is a physical battle. And I think that he would try to be disappointed in Nicole Kennedy, but also willing to give her another chance. And mm-hmm. she would be like, fuck you, and bury a stiletto in his eardrum.
Yeah.
She's actually not that mean, as far as I know, but she's significantly meaner than both of the other two in this round put together. So, Nicole.
All right. Moving on.
Oh, boy. Our second round's a banger. Walter White of Breaking Bad is the one who knocks. Mr. Garvey from that Key and Peele sketch, and Annalise Keating, the law professor in How to Get Away with Murder.
All right, so Walter White from Breaking Bad. Now, considering this is a teacher Thunderdome, I sort of assume this was Walter White near the start of the series Breaking Bad while he is still teaching before he quits full time to follow his dreams of becoming a meth empire mogul.
Sure.
Then we have Mr. Garvey from Key and Peele. Mr. Garvey is the substitute teacher in the sketch that is sort of like the reverse Uno card. I don't know how to pronounce any of your names, white kids in my class.
Right.
And he just gets increasingly angry with everybody. And then it kind of moves on from names to what clubs they're in and all this sort of thing. He's a very, very angry man.
Indeed.
Yeah. And Annalise Keating is the professor who's teaching them how to get away with murder. Granted, in theory, like at the pitch level, this is how to get defendants off the hook for murder. But, you know, people are killing people on that show. So, and also she's played by Viola Davis, who is a serious badass no matter what role she's in.
Very true. I'll start. Mr. Garvey, I think, has the advantage of height, I believe, over both of these combatants. He's played by Keegan-Michael Key.
Your name would be Tayra.
That's right. Yeah. I would be Tayra. Yeah. He, however, I feel like that's the end of his advantages. The point of the sketch is he gets very flustered. He can't roll with any adversity, any confusion. He's just gets increasingly angry and annoyed, and that's not going to serve him in Thunderdome. When you need to have, I mean, you need to be angry, you need to be aggressive, but you also need to have a plan. And I don't necessarily think he has one. So then that brings us to Walter White and Annalise Keating, a couple of fucking murderers who are real good at planning. And really good at adjusting on the fly as circumstances warrant. Oh, man, I guess I have to, if we're talking about Walter White at the start of the series, I got to give it to Annalise Keating because she is not actively dying of lung cancer. So that's my pick for this one. Sarah.
Agree with you right down the line. Garvey does have the advantage of height and of being played by someone born March 22nd, which means poor impulse control and rage issues. Aries in the house. But that's, again, you need a plan and you need some focus. You need to be able to channel your rage and terror in a productive fashion. I'm not able to do that. And I've seen that sketch and no, Garvey is not able to do that either. I think that Walter White, when it comes right down to it, I think Walter White is possibly got more ice water in the veins, but there's also, you know, lung cancer in the veins. So I agree. It's Annalise Keating's to lose in this round.
All right. So it's already decided. I just have a question about how to get away with murder. Is she the one that got away with murder or is she just teach it?
Both.
She knows what she's talking about. All right. Yep. I can't disagree with what you said, although I do want a special dispensation to pull Mr. Garvey out just before he dies, heal him, and then put him up in the announcer booth for the rest of the Thunderdome.
Yes.
Okay. Granted.
All right.
Dispensation granted.
Third match coming up. We got Chuck Noblett from Strangers with Candy. That is the Stephen Colbert character. We have Gil Myers from Beverly Hills 90210, a teacher from that show. Mm-hmm. All I can imagine is Gil from The Simpsons. Oh, no. Gil. Not the same guy.
Mm-mm.
And Ji-Yoon Kim from The Chair, the Sandra Oh character.
That's right.
Woo! All right, so I'll start. Chuck Noblet is my submission. This is the Stephen Colbert teacher from Strangers with Candy, who hates the lead character, Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
And he's closeted in the show, I think, right?
Yep.
But he has a lot of anger towards Jerry. So the reason I put him in is to see how much just unearned hatred can get you in the Thunderdome. Because he's got a lot of that negative energy, and see if it'll help him spill out in this battle.
Gil Myers, a.k.a. Bishop Loafhead, is the advisor of the Beverly Hills Blaze. A lot of parents read it. And also their English teacher, and he is a dance chaperone repeatedly. He is a sucker for girls in their party shoes. Bizarre.
Okay. He's young. He's not old, even though his name is Gil, right?
Yeah, he's the youngest Gil alive. Yeah. He's like in his
30s. Yeah.
Correct.
And then Ji-Yoon Kim, Dave already said, it's the Sandra Oh character from The Chair, the Netflix show that we talked about when it came out last year. She is the titular chair, although the show is also, you know, when it starts, the show is about the battle of being in the chair of an English department at a, what we're given to understand is a lesser Ivy university. Sarah, please start.
I am going to eliminate Loafhead immediately because I think he's going to be distracted by, he does have superior size, and I guess he could annoy someone to the point of like bursting into flames. But if he didn't manage to do it to us, I'm not sure it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
So provided he's not put on administrative leave mid Thunderdome for doing something sort of borderline inappropriate with an eighth grade student, allegedly, I think that he is distracted by some barely 18-year-old in a pair of patent leather Mary Janes in the front row, and one of the others buries a hatchet in his loaf head, which that is very poofy hair, but I don't think it is sharpened blade proof. That leaves Chuck and Ji-Yoon. And this is tough because I don't feel like Chuck Noblet is a particularly competent rage practitioner. I think he's just filled with loathing and doesn't know how to direct it.
Nobody's competent on that show. There is nobody with their shit together.
That's like the point of it. Yeah. Ji-Yoon Kim, like, administratively she seems maybe overmatched by the situation, but it's Sandra Oh, and I feel like there is sort of Killing Eve competence like in the air around her, so I just don't feel like I have enough information based on what I know of these two characters, so I'm going to give it to Ji-Yoon Kim provisionally. But I can be talked out of it.
No, I'll go. I agree. I think she's the best of a weak lot here.
Really?
Yeah. And well, I mean, didn't she like lose her chair? Right?
Yes.
Right. So like, she's not great, but neither are the other ones either. So I just feel like she squeaks by, and I sort of agree with Sarah that like Chuck, he doesn't have what it takes, and Gil sounds like his power is just being a creep. Like if there was a Thunderdome, if there was like a rule of Thunderdome, where as a contestant, you know, knowing that your odds are you're going in to face your death, everybody gets to put one weapon up on the wall.
Right.
With rules. You know, you can't put a nuclear tactical nuke on the wall or something like that. But like if you could do that and like Chuck says, okay, I'm going to put that 18-year-old girl in the leather pants up on the wall as my weapon that distracts Gil, like that kind of thing could work. But that's not the rule system we're working with. It's just a smattering of sort of, you know, rusty swords and knives and stuff like that for them to grab brass knuckles, you know, pointed this, pointed that.
Sure.
So I feel that Sarah is correct, that she just is, she wins like by a hair.
Point of order. Sarah said patent leather, Mary Janes. You think Mary Janes are pants?
I don't know what she said. I just heard leather and I assumed it was pants.
No, Mary Janes are a kind of shoe with a strap across the across.
Well,
the
I heard creep. I heard leather.
Yeah,
you know.
Totally. I mean, the character that he's, you know, accused it turns out wrongly, of perving on, is someone who like changes into more risque clothes when she gets to school. So, you know, if Sue Scanlon had access to leather pants, she is definitely wearing them to West Beverly. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a question, but that's a separate issue. I, you know, it's already decided, so it doesn't matter what I say, but I'm still going to say, on the basis that Ji-Yoon Kim cannot even hang on to her title at this college after six episodes of the show, to me says she is not, she is just not strong enough to do this. I don't necessarily think Gil Myers is going to win either. I mean, he went to Yale. That means he's wussy, in my opinion. Just kidding, kind of. But I'm going to give it to, I would give it to Chuck personally, because I just think he is a coiled man of rage with a lot of aggression to get out in whatever ways he has access to. But
I mean, Kim takes I can see that. As long as you're not sort of throwing your weight, as it were, behind Gil, who does have, I think, superior size, but also like does not notice basic things at the prom.
Yeah.
And mispronounces author names and
he does.
Hawthorne.
Yeah. But I'm fine with Kim progressing, with Ji-Yoon Kim progressing. So all right, back to me. Our next matchup, we have Ross Geller of Friends, Jack Griffin of AP Bio, and Mr. Ambrose, who is the librarian at Wagstaff on Bob's Burgers. Ross Geller, you know, for better or worse, we all know who he is. He starts out as a paleontologist at the museum, but at the end of the series, he is a professor of paleontology at NYU, I believe we're supposed to think.
Jack Griffin from AP Bio is a real dick. And I, as soon as I remembered that he was a teacher, I'm like, he could go far. He is Machiavellian. He has a high survival instinct throughout the show, and he is petty. So I think those traits could do well for him here.
Well, we'll find out. And our third combatant is Mr. Ambrose. He is another cartoon. He's voiced by Billy Eichner, and he's really passive aggressive. So we'll get into that as well. Who's starting this one off? Dave, I think.
All right. I feel Jack Griffin in this one. Mr. Ambrose, I mean, how much time can he spend wearing somebody down passive aggressively before somebody puts a brass knuckles to his forehead or whatever? He needs time. He needs to wear you down over the school year, I think, in order to be an effective combatant. You would have to have previous experience exposure with him in order to be susceptible to his combat style in Thunderdome on that day. Ross Geller is just super wimpy kind of guy. And I feel like Jack is just going to eat him alive. So I'm going Jack here.
Well, I agree. Mr. Ambrose, his main method of combat is making rude comments under his breath, but then making sure that they have been heard by their intended audience. Yes, Dave?
I just want to also point out that if we had Gil Myers, the falsely accused perv, and then we have Ross Geller, the perv that went out with like a 17-year-old or whatever the hell that was in the Bruce Willis's daughter storyline. I'm just saying.
I mean, I'm shocked that you remember that, but that's a great point. She was a college freshman, but still, she was way too young for him. So fair point. But I'm counting out Mr. Ambrose, as previously said. He's being snotty is not going to get you very far in Thunderdome.
But it has good entertainment value.
I respect
it. The crowd enjoys it.
Absolutely. But it's not going to get the job done. So this does come down to Ross and Jack. And there is an episode of Friends where during the phase when Ross is dating Emily, his British future briefly wife, where she runs into a bunch of her old friends who played rugby, and he's like baited into wanting to play with them, even though he is not able to play rugby at all. It's a very tough game. And he tries to make the case that he's going to be okay because he's going to go Red Ross. But even when he does go Red Ross, he still ends up getting fucking wrecked. So I think, you know, even if Ross manages to get in there with some kind of tool that he used to put together a display at the museum, if he has an awl in his pocket or something, I still think Jack Griffin, the ultimate survivor, that's his whole story on the show, is going to be the ultimate survivor here as well.
I think the angriest Ross ever got on the show is when somebody stole his sandwich.
Well, he wasn't thrilled when people didn't agree with him that they were on a break either. So there's a few examples of Ross getting mad. But anyway, Sarah.
I mean, I think that if we posit, as I am positing, that Mr. Ambrose cannot bring in a stack of hardcover books to either drop on somebody from a height or literally Death by a Thousand Paper Cuts them. And if Ross Geller is not able to get like a Diplodocus bone with which to brain people.
I used to get those in gym class when I was a kid.
Here's the interesting thing. Ross Geller is played by a guy who was also played by... who also played Robert Kardashian, who True. In real life was like a foot shorter. So this is a believably wee personality. Mm. Like he just projects whiny and ineffectual successfully at a question mark. I mean, you know, I don't mind this actor, but I just don't think he has any chance against anyone with any even modicum of whether righteous or not, petty scheming and survival instinct. So yeah, Griffin.
Moving on, we have Mr. Kulkarni from Never Have I Ever, Ava Coleman from Abbott Elementary, and Huyang.
Yeah.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. And Huyang from The Clone Wars. So the first two of these were my submissions. Mr. Kulkarni is an English teacher at Sherman Oaks High School. He is played by Utkarsh Ambudkar. He is our lead, Davy's favorite teacher. He also, in the third season, ends up dating her gorgeous cousin. So he manages to get in with the family. That's a feather in his cap. Ava Coleman is the principal at Abbott Elementary, played by Janelle James. I'm going to say the best character in a very good show.
And Huyang, okay, get this. All right, so this guy's a robot professor. Mm. He's been around for thousands of years. He actually trained Yoda in his specialty, which is how to construct lightsabers. Mm-hmm. So he's this old robot guy, voiced by David Tennant from Doctor Who.
Okay.
Oh.
Who teaches little tiny Jedi kids how to make their lightsaber when it comes time to do that. So he has access to a lot of lightsabery things. He is a robot, but he has like R2-D2-esque things that pop out, like extra arms and stuff like that, too.
Oh, okay.
So I will say he's also kind of like an older professor type from like Harry Potter, kind of like doddering, kind of like forgetful, too, as well. So to paint you a picture.
Okay. I will start us off. Mr. Kulkarni, he really has a great arc in season 3, winning over Davy's grandmother, who is opposed to him on principle because he's not Indian. He's Indian American. He doesn't speak Hindi. He doesn't really know anything about his culture. She is against him. And then he eventually wins her over. But this isn't a charm contest. It's a battle to the death. So I don't think the skills that we have seen from him are going to help him here. He also has the chance to like basically probably get Davy like suspended or expelled from school, and he doesn't, which is good for her character. Shows he does not have the eye of the tiger in terms of, you know, really going after people who honestly, given the story, kind of deserve it. So this comes down to Ava versus Huyang. And when you said robot, mm-hmm. and then you said old, and then you said daughtering. So
he's not feeble. He's got that sort of absent-minded professor vibe to him. He's not physically feeble in the show. Like he rummages through all the, you know, archives and stuff, and he's doing 12 things at once and things like that.
Okay.
He just also was like, where did I put that? Blah, blah, blah.
Got it. So it's that guy versus Ava, who is so focused and ruthless in her career that it's established in the series premiere that even though she is wildly unqualified for her job, she got it through blackmail. Like she's super mean to every teacher who reports to her across the board, really indiscriminately, just like it disdains absolutely all of them. Honestly, has no business being around children, you know, not because it seems like she would harm them, but just she's a real bitch.
Shouldn't be around people. Yeah.
Shouldn't be around people. Exactly. So even though Huyang is a robot and combat is literally part of his job, not only combat, but being good enough at combat that you can teach it. I'm still giving this to Ava.
Point of order, and to bolster your case, he doesn't teach combat. He teaches how to make lightsabers.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
as like part of the you know, process of being a Jedi, I guess.
Okay, well, nevertheless, yeah. I'm sticking on Ava. Sarah?
I haven't watched any of these shows, but I just feel like somebody who knows how to build a lethal sword made of energy is going to be able to find some shit in the dust and planks and, you know, dropped garbage in Thunderdome to put together a weapon to kill Ava. She could be as mean and ruthless as she wants, but office politics are not actually Thunderdome. And I just feel like a, you know, creature that can't bleed or fear death because it's a robot is the one to bet. So Dave, break the tie.
All right. I added Huyang in here because I just thought it would be fun to have a robot teacher in there.
Sure.
And he's the only one I could think of off the top of my head.
Fair.
So in the scene where he's introduced, there's all these Jedi kids, including a tiny little cute Wookiee who's going to be a Jedi, who's got one snaggle tooth that goes up.
Aww.
And they're all tasked with finding their little crystal and then they make their lightsaber. And they're all asking him stupid questions, right? Like, because they're all just dumb kids. And he's like, gets a little bit pissed, but he is like, blah, 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 and then goes on to explain why he's the best robot Jedi there ever was. Probably also the only one. But I feel like you can get to him with questions and you could actually get into his robot head. Cyclical conversation with willful ignorance, you know, with that kind of stuff. And I think Ava is like rolls a natural 20 and all those things. And yeah. I feel like he's not a big hulking robot too. He's like, if David Tennant was a robot, imagine David Tennant as a robot. That's what he is. He's got tiny little pipe arms and stuff like that. So I don't really think it's going to take a lot to disassemble him in battle. And they don't really show him with like a flamethrower or anything like that. He's just got like lots of administrative helping appendages to open drawers and sort through stuff quickly and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't use a lightsaber. Like they never show him. He doesn't teach how to use it. Just teaches how to make it. So I think I'm going to give this
one to Ava. This is a meaningless distinction, but apparently I'm outnumbered. So.
So yeah, I feel like Ava's got the sternness and the drive and the lack of empathy to go far here. So I'm going to give this one to Ava.
All right.
All right, next up, it is Professor X from the X-Men animated show of the 90s, Roland Prebulski from The Wire, and Mr. Katinsky from My So-Called Life. Starting off with Professor X from the X-Men. This is a guy who uses his brain to know things and to do things and to make you think things. He was played by Patrick Stewart in the movies, if that helps you, if you're not familiar with the X-Men. So he basically has mind powers.
Mm-hmm.
Roland Prebulski, a.k.a. Prez from The Wire, an incompetent cop who was, you know, busted in season one down to trying to figure out their whole beeper system in the towers, which he does do. And then in season four, he becomes a teacher. And Mr. Katimsky from My So-Called Life, Enrique, he takes Ricky in towards the end of the first and only season of My So-Called Life. And to this day, I repeat locutions of his and, you know, like sits in the dark, turning a light on and off. Is this a legendary fighter? I would say no. I guess I will just jump in and say that I love Mr. Katimsky like he is a real family member, but he will be immediately like popped like a pimple in Thunderdome, I feel. So it's down to Professor X and Presbo. I feel like Prez, like, even if there is a gun in Thunderdome, the whole reason that he wound up on The Wire detail is because he got drunk and was not shepherding his firearm properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's, like, totally overwhelmed by systemic problems and biases in season four. With that said, he's determined. He sticks with things even when they seem hopeless. And Jim Trufrost is a pretty big, tall guy. So maybe he's got a shot. I mean, Professor X, like, you know, thinking is great, but wielding a mace is better. So
it makes you walk up to the top of the dome and just drop off.
Well, you can make your case when it's your turn,
saying, Dave. I'm going to say
Prez provisionally, but I will hear arguments.
All right, Dave, you're next.
All right. I also think it's between Professor X and Prebulowski. And here's why the surprise Prebulowski victory comes into play.
Whoa!
Okay, so imagine these two are the two left.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, Professor X is in a wheelchair or a hover chair, whatever he's got at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think Prebulowski might be too stupid to be affected by Professor X's mind games. I feel like he won't have full control of him. And once you remove that advantage, Professor X's advantage of being able to use telepathy, I feel like then you've got Preb running around full range of motion. You got Professor X in a wheelchair. It doesn't move that fast. He can't rotate that fast. All Preb has to do is just get behind him and snap his neck. And he'll have all the time in the world to snap his neck. Or he can just like suffocate him or something. So even though Professor X, like, you know, on the battle ready strength scale would seem like a 9, I feel like Prebulowski is like a negative 10. You know what I mean? Like, it's like we got fire and water right here. And I feel like Prebulowski actually might be able to survive a battle with Professor X just because he's kind of dense.
All right. Okay. So Professor X's power, can he not like essentially incept a thought in someone's mind?
I think so.
Well, then this is silly because if he has a hover chair, fucking hover to the top of the dome.
No. It doesn't fly around.
Tell both the other two.
No. It doesn't fly around.
All right.
It just hovers on the ground, I think. I've seen them both in a wheelchair and in like a chair that's just like a hovercraft.
Well, fair. Leaving that aside.
Okay.
Back away from the other two.
These are the conversations I'm here for, by the way.
It's absolutely.
On how the hover chair will affect the outcome.
Yes. True. But I'm saying all he has to do is incept the other two with kill one another.
Uh-huh.
He does that and then he's fine.
What I'm saying is Prebulowski might be too dumb to be incepted.
I don't understand what dumb or smart has to do with having a thought inserted in your mind.
I don't know. It's like, you know,
yeah,
like
if he can seed self-destructive thoughts in other people, then it's Professor X. But on the other hand, then why are we doing the rest of the Thunderdome if that's true?
I mean, fair enough. And you guys already voted, so it doesn't matter. But I'm just saying, for the record, that I would say Professor X for that reason.
You're probably right. But in order for this to actually be a competition,
If you think Tara is right, you should vote Professor X. That's the way this works. You can't put your finger on the scale because you think it will be less or more entertaining down the road. Who knows what will happen? Also, I think Prebulowski is too dumb to actually be properly mind controlled. But
okay. All right, I already voted for Prez, so
all right.
Next up, we have Laura Ingalls Wilder from Little House on the Prairie, Miss Othmar, aka Trombone Mouth, from the Peanuts specials, the Galaxy of Peanuts specials, and Rupert Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Laura Ingalls Wilder was my contribution. That is, of course, Melissa Gilbert, Frontier Toughness. When we first start the series, of course, she's still a kid, but a big part of the book series and later on in the TV series is her being a teacher in Walnut Grove.
Mm-hmm.
I also added Rupert Giles, the legendary librarian played by Anthony Stewart Head on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Miss Othmar, as all Peanut adults in the specials, in the Charlie Brown specials, is never seen and only heard as trombone noises.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it is going to be an interesting, what is her physical manifestation in the Thunderdome?
Yeah.
Is she tangible? Is she just a disconnected ethereal trombone somewhere in the top of it? That's an interesting question. But her character is mentioned in context of Linus having a crush on her. That is the particular teacher we're talking about.
Okay.
I'll start us off here. Pioneer woman, trombone mouth, possibly without a corporeal body.
That's right.
And the watcher, Rupert Giles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rupert definitely has the Pennyworth backstory going for him.
Yep.
I am the bruiser from back in the old country. I know how to brawl in the streets. Also, I know some magic. Also, I know about demons and supernatural forces. Like, he's got a lot on paper to help him out here, for sure. Laura Ingalls Wilder, I mean, it would be novel for her to have some skills in the Thunderdome that would help her out, but I don't really think she does. She's not the one that gets kicked and goes blind, right?
No.
It's not her? Okay.
No.
Maybe she had some animal summoning powers or something I could work into there, but it doesn't seem to be the case.
No.
So I think then we have to look at Miss Othmar, the Peanuts cartoon. Bad news for her that one of her foes in her first round Thunderdome is somebody who understands the nature of the supernatural. So even if she is non-corporeal, I think Giles could actually make her corporeal, you know, by
and
whatever
then kill her.
Yeah.
You know, arcane knowledge that he has.
Yes.
And then put an end to her with his street toughs. Mm-hmm. So Rupert Giles was my pick going into this. After some thought, I still think it's Rupert Giles easily.
I agree. And what we haven't said is Rupert Giles is also a witch, I believe, canonically. Is that not the case, Sarah?
I believe in the Notorious season finale, I'd like to test that theory. I think the backstory there is that a coven associated with the Watcher org in England basically like mentally pooled their powers and imbued him with them.
Okay.
But the other thing to know is that for the first like season and a half, two seasons of Buffy, like it was a running gag that he got knocked out in every fight.
Okay,
in every like all hands fight, he would get knocked the fuck out. So
yeah. Fair enough, but I'm gonna say, you know, in those other fights he was battling supernaturally powered individuals and creatures, and here he's battling a maybe person we truly don't know.
The former president of SAG.
That's
ooh.
Yeah. I mean, Miss Othmar could be a voice on a radio for all we know. I mean, Dave makes a great point about making her corporeal in order to vanquish her. And Laura Ingalls Wilder, I think she probably has frontier skills in terms of, like, it would be no thing for her to, like, cut off a chicken's head.
Milk Giles? Yep. Oh.
Yeah, I think she has like farm skills. Mm-hmm. You know, she's able to dress a piece of livestock or whatever the hell. And that would probably, you know, in close combat with a knife, she would probably be okay, even if, you know, that's not what she normally does in her day to day. But even with Giles having a tough time in the first season and a half with, you know, fighting zombies and vampires and whatever the hell else, I still think Giles takes this one. Sarah.
I mean, and his whole like backstory in Band Candy is that he was a, you know, like band guy, like musician guy,
right.
Slash
yeah.
Clockwork Orange type tough, whose name was Ripper.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's closer maybe than we think between him and Laura.
Yeah.
Old trombone head, I think, is out of it. Now I'm picturing her though as that. Those creatures that they briefly get turned into in Beetlejuice with the very long heads.
Yes.
But also, like, maybe it's a situation like like Black Bolt from Marvel, where he has like a killing sound. Mm-hmm. And the reason why Miss Othmar has that voice the way it is on the show is that her real voice is a killing voice. We'll never
Bolt.
Know.
Picturing me making the Steve Holt motion. Yeah, I think it's Giles because he did get knocked out, but he always, you know, survived. And it was like really like, how are they going to stop Willow on this rampage? And when he shows up and flattens her and knocks over a whole bookshelf, and I mean, a whole nation started screaming because he was back and he was powered by an entire coven. So,
yeah.
Giles.
Just before we move on, in case Dan Cassino is listening and he's screaming at his iPod device, I just want to say that Black Bolt's full name is Blackagar Boltagon.
Wow.
No thanks.
Moving on.
But he's played by Captain Pike. So, you know.
Oh, okay. That's fun. Yeah. Next, we have Dorothy Zbornak from The Golden Girls, Cordelia Fox from American Horror Story, and Mr. Harris from The New Adventures of Old Christine. boy, who put in Dorothy's Mornack? One has to wonder.
Twas me, and what? I assume she needs no introduction. I believe she is still teaching occasionally in the, like, it's not just pre the action of the series. I think she's, like, occasionally a sub. Yeah.
Yeah. So the other two, we have Cordelia Fox from the Coven season of American Horror Story. She's played by Sarah Paulson. She's the head of the whatever the school is called, the witch school. And then Mr. Harris from The New Adventures of Old Christine is played by Blair Underwood. He is the classroom teacher of Christine's son when he's in grade 4 or 5 or whatever. I went hard for Giles and his witch powers in our last matchup. And so you would think that I would do the same for Cordelia. And she, you know, is literally a witch and a teacher of witches. But her whole story for that season is she's the worst witch ever. She somehow doesn't know that her husband is cheating on her. She ends up going blind. I mean, she becomes the supreme by the end of it under a really shaky circumstances where, you know, we were supposed to think the Supreme had robust good health, which she doesn't for most of it. So, you know, she's kind of a bumbler. She's a fuck up. Mr. Harris's main power is being extremely attractive. He ends up dating Christine for a time. She continues to call him Mr. Harris for that almost that whole time, which is very funny and cute. But, you know, he's like a middle school teacher and is gentle and in every way you would expect someone who teaches tween kids to be. And that leaves us with Dorothy's Mornack. And, you know, we already said passive aggressive doesn't get you far when we were talking about Mr. Ambrose. But somehow Dorothy's Mornack's cutting remarks might actually leave a mark. She is so withering. She certainly towers over both of her combatants, and if all else fails, yes, she could just wrap them in her caftan, you know, cardigan outfits or her wide legged pants and, you know, strangle them, suffocate them, what have you. So I'm giving this one to Dorothy. Sarah.
Same answer for the same reasons. The voluminous attire can be both weapon of strangulation / suffocation and armor against others. But it sounds like she wouldn't really have much need of a defensive strategy. Handsomeness is not a weapon, alas. And yeah.
Wait, hang on. If charm isn't a weapon, charm is just the inverse of a withering, you know, Balmain or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the two sides of the same coin.
Right, but Bea Arthur is a foot taller than Blair Underwood. Like, charm, there's charm, and then there's she could step on you and kill you.
She's also 40 years older.
Well, she's also dead, but if you really want to get into this, we can. Okay,
but no, the character is obviously much older.
Right.
Yeah. The way that old was framed on that show versus how we think of it now, like, what was she, 5 years older than us when the show started? Like, you know, so there's that. But I mean, I think she's tall, she's battle tested with years and years of teaching and kids being little shits and literally biting her ankles, probably. And Cordelia's not that good at her job. Like Tara said, like, okay, if you're going by the end result, okay, but it took her a while to become the Supreme and she doesn't have that kind of time and she maybe can't see. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't think sight impairment helps in this scenario, frankly. So, yeah, Dorothy.
What kind of spells did she spin?
It's been too long since I watched, so I don't recall. The usual.
The usual witch stuff.
Yeah. She could do potions, poisons, probably telepathy.
Right.
I don't know.
Okay. I think I would give this to Mr. Harris. If that witch is ineffectual as a witch and also perhaps also blind and cannot use her witchy powers to like predator the situation in real time in the moment. Zabornak versus Harris, I would give it to the youthful, fit Mr. Harris over the likable but old bag that is Dorothy Zabornak.
Yeah, I
who
mean...
Who is also wearing 17 bags.
I don't care about her fashion. Everybody's got weird clothes in here.
I mean, if it's a seduction challenge, this is no question, yeah. But, you know, it's not.
All right, our last matchup is Miss Stacy from Anne with an E Dr. Campbell from Frasier, and he, I don't know, he's from Frasier.
That's
he
right.
was the headmaster from the Thanksgiving episode where Frasier and Lilith are trying to get their son into his academy.
Mm-hmm.
And Gabe Cotter from Welcome Back, Cotter.
Yeah, I submitted Dr. Campbell. Dave already introduced him. That's who he is. He's played by Paxton Whitehead in an episode from 1996 called A Lilith Thanksgiving. And Miss Stacy was also my submission. She's from Anne with an E. That is the Anne of Green Gables adaptation. And so she is the one-room schoolhouse teacher in Avonlea.
And of course, Gabe Cotter, the eponymous teacher from Welcome Back, Cotter, who I think this project was designed as a showcase for Gabe Kaplan. And then
yes.
he was completely overtaken by the supernova that was and kind of still is John Travolta. So
it's true. Sarah, why don't you start us off?
I contributed Gabe Cotter, and now I gotta knock him right out. He's small, and he couldn't even fend off, like, falling into a charisma vacuum created by himself. he was fine, but, like, it was a mid-70s sitcom, and with everything that that implies. And as much as we love the theme song of his show and calling him Mr. Cotter, he's going to be like killed immediately because he's going to be like, am I right? And then a throwing star is just going to lodge itself in his eye.
Yeah.
My sense is that if it's down to two and one of them is Canadian, the Canadian is dead. So I'm going to go with Dr. Campbell. Sorry, guys. Dave.
No, I'm going to let Tara go first because I don't know anything about Misty.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, Gabe Cotter might be able to hold off combatants by telling them long meandering stories about one of his uncles or whatever, like he did in the show. But that's only going to work for so long. So I do think it comes down to Miss Stacy versus Dr. Campbell. And Miss Stacy, she's a widow. She's a single woman in, you know, turn of the century Prince Edward Island. She's got to know a little bit about everything because, as I said, she's teaching in a one-room schoolhouse. She is a proto, you know, progressive social justice teacher. She encourages the kids to, like, start their own newspaper, and then they run afoul of the town, who then burn down the school and steal the press. Like,
oh my God.
And with an E goes hard. That's the fucking school Jesus. Board that does this. Like,
wow.
No one is there. They do it at night. But still,
yeah,
and she stands her ground, is not intimidated. Toward the end of the third and sadly final season, it is hinted that she's going to get together with a local widower who's really cute. Used to be on Degrassi. But I'm still going to give it to Dr. Campbell, even though he was not able to fend off repeated imposing visits from Frasier and Lilith coming by and coming by again to try to lobby him about admitting their son Frasier into his very fancy private school. Running a very fancy private school requires a lot of tough decisions and steely nerves. This guy's tall, he's mean, he's British. I would assume that he's able to hold off both of these other two idiots with absolutely no problem. And Dr. Campbell's my pick.
Mm. Huh. See, I feel like Dr. Campbell's power in that episode is just that he holds the decision of admittance or not for Frederick, their son. And otherwise, he's kind of a bumbling idiot. Like, he can't do Thanksgiving dinner properly. He didn't cook a turkey right. And all that. But he's holding a Thanksgiving dinner. He's invited all his family over for whatever reason, and he's fucking it up. So I don't really know how competent he is. I feel like if Gabe Cotter is sort of like an ineffectual fighter, he definitely falls into that same category once you go. And I don't think any of these contestants are like have inherent strength. But if you just kind of put them all on a, you know, they're teachers and they do their job and sometimes they're mean and sometimes they're inspirational. I would just give it to the person that is furthest back in time, and mean meant mean with a capital M.
Uh-huh.
And when you had to like discipline somebody, you would hit them instead of like figuring out what was wrong with them. I just feel like there's a odds on better chance that Miss Stacy is like genuinely tougher than these other two. Not tough, tougher.
Mm. Well, and she has to drag around like a skirt with a hoop. But you could also make the argument that Gabe Cotter is teaching in 1970s New York City. Like, mm-hmm. if he got to school in one piece after taking the subway, maybe yeah. he does have skills.
The other thing to know about Miss Stacy is that she takes over the school from the previous teacher, who was like actually super mean and kind of had an inappropriate relationship with one of the older students, that they end up like sort of countermanding the scandal with the family by just having them get married. And that's icky. She's not mean. She's nice. But, you know, I can accept this on frontier grounds, I guess. So I'll change my vote.
Well, plus she's got muscles from lifting all the potato sacks from Prince Edward Island to and fro from Charlottetown to another town on that island.
Yes, she lives alone. She like has to, you know, fend for herself, do all her own food. We see her like searching for whatever. She is tough in her way. So fine, I will change my mind to Miss Stacy.
All right. So that means we are done with our first round matchups. We are now in the playoffs. We have three matches for you. Starting off in our first division, we have Nicole Kennedy from Dawson's Creek, Annalise Keating from How to Get Away with Murder, and Ji-Yoon Kim from The Chair.
Dave, why don't you go first?
All right. Woo. Okay. So we've established that Annalise Keating has real murder bona fides. Nicole Kennedy, very mean, but perhaps not a murderer on Dawson's Creek. And I feel like The Chair, like that, we kind of like, she eked by on that one. So I feel like Kim's out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And agree. I feel Keating versus Kennedy, I'm going to go with the one who's already murdered people.
I mean,
I feel like she gets in the ring in the dome and she's like, bam, like just like straight off, you know, as soon as the siren, gunshot, whatever announces the start of the festivities, she like makes a beeline to Kennedy and is like, she's out.
Oh, yeah.
No, she rips Nicole Kennedy's arm off and beats June to death with it.
There we go.
And it does not take long. So, and neither should this round, in my opinion. Yeah. It's Annalise Keating.
Agree. For all of those reasons, she's, you know, Nicole is mean. Annalise is a murderer, as we've established. And I already didn't think Ji-Yoon should have proceeded. So clearly the victor is obvious here.
Yeah. All right. Second semifinal is Jack Griffin of AP Bio versus Ava Coleman of Abbott Elementary versus Roland Presbuleski of The Wire. And I mean, this one seems fairly obvious to me also, but we could talk through it. But I think Presbo's out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Insufficiently mean and possibly too stupid to survive any further.
Oh, now he's too stupid to survive. I see.
That was my objection, not Sarah's. Go ahead.
Okay.
And now we're
I'm not
down
angry
to
about it, that's what you're
Jack
thinking.
Griffin versus Ava Coleman. You're yeah. totally angry about it. Yeah, do you I need am. To keep talking about it?
I feel like I and a lot of my good friends are going to have a separate TV Thunderdome for teachers. And Professor X is going to win the first round. And then we'll see what's what after that. And we're going to have cookies and punch. And it's going to be a fun time.
I'm so happy for you. Or I would be if I cared, but I don't, and neither does Tara. Anyway, Jack and Ava. My sense is that Ava is enough ruthless-er. I'm just going to take that again.
Great
is enough has enough ruthlessness for this entire Thunderdome and extra to spare. So I'm going to vote Ava.
Dave.
Tara.
Oh, boy. I don't know. Ava... Jack, first of all, that is a episode, a scene that I would like to see those two together in an office. I mean, Ava is ruthless and determined and lazy at the same time. Like, she is a curious mix of what makes her tick. And Jack is scheming. He bats like 500. You know, he's a schemer, doesn't always win, but he also doesn't always lose. Like, a character like that, he doesn't get as comeuppance as much as you would think in the show for all the stuff he does. He definitely gets some victories under his belt.
Yeah.
They're both bad kind of people. They're both bad teachers or bad educators anyways. Mm-hmm. When it comes into the ring, oh boy. I mean, I think like if it was Dungeons and Dragons terms, I think like Jack is the thief that like is setting the traps and stuff like that. You know, like when she picks the sword off the thing and like, you know, springs out and like kills her without him having to get his hands dirty. Like he's that sort of combatant. Where she, I feel like, would take the more direct approach. Mm. And I think when you're thrown into the Thunderdome, the direct approach would win here, even though I feel like Jack, like water, given enough time, would erode any foe.
Yeah.
But in the confines of an immediate action-based do-or-die situation in Thunderdome, I would give Ava the edge.
Oh my God, this is so hard because Dave mentioned that Ava is lazy, and that is true. But so is Jack a lot of the time. He is certainly not interested in teaching. That is for certain.
He is a delegator of his schemes too.
Yes, he is. Mm. And I'm you know, I like everybody, I'm leaving Roland Prisbalusky out of this. He is not a factor. So the question becomes, what happened? What did Ava decide once she got through her first round? Because based on the evidence of the show, once she got her position as principal, she checked out. She stopped doing work. She started doing TikToks. And that's basically been what fills her days at the titular Abbott Elementary. She is just fucking around. Whereas Jack Griffin, not interested in teaching, but certainly still interested in advancing his own interests and is always busy at something that is not his job, but that does advance him personally. So I think that Ava in her second round is not going to understand or care that like she has not actually solved life, as it were. And Jack never stopped thinking about how to progress and get to the next stage of what he wants to do in his life. On the show, he's always trying to like get back to Harvard, sell a book proposal, blah, blah, blah. Whereas Ava is just like, I got my job. I'm done. I am parked here with tenure until my pension comes through.
And Tara, I think you're changing my mind, because here's the other thing that Jack Griffin would do. Mm-hmm. He would get his AP bio class to help him infiltrate the inner workings of Thunderdome ahead of time.
That's right.
He totally
when he
would.
Got there, he had advantages, whatever they were. Planted weapons, drug competitors, sympathetic judges or whatever, you know. Tina Turner appears and she's like, he just wins. And you're like, why? Because I run Bartertown, she says. And that's that. So
I can be convinced by that also.
All right.
Our last round of the semifinals, Rupert Giles, Dorothy's Bornak, Miss Stacy from Anne with an E. I'll go first. Miss Stacy, she squeaked through, so she's out of this.
I agree.
Yeah, agree.
So Giles versus Dorothy.
What about her flowy clothes?
Yeah, Dorothy's mean and withering, as I said, but you know, now she's going to be facing off against a witch or, you know, otherwise supernaturally powered or skilled person who, as previously discussed, also has street smarts. That's something Cordelia Fox in the previous round definitely does not possess. Giles has to survive this so that he can continue to train the next generation of slayers. Dorothy is, let's face it,
what
we
if
all love
Dorothy
her.
Was the next slayer?
She's
and this
not.
Is sort of a catch 22 situation.
I'm pretty sure she is too old. Dorothy is at the end of her life. She does not have as much fight in her as Rupert Giles does.
The only thing I couldn't stand about Miami, all the damn vampires.
It's Giles for me. Sarah.
I want Dave to go next.
Okay. Let's see. We've got Zabornak, who shouldn't have been in the fine in at this particular place, if you ask me.
Fair's fair, but fine.
We didn't.
So I feel like we start off, everybody enters the dome. Giles just doesn't need supernatural shit or watcher shit. He just grabs a sword, just sticks it through her skull. What's she gonna do? Run away? Use her flappy, terrible fashions to do whatever?
To
this
fly.
Is open and shut. We're done. Giles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, I thought Dorothy had a better argument than that, but I must say that Rupert Giles, who can not only probably punch her to death, literally, but could punch her to death with his mind, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Miss Stacy, a non-starter. And I think Dorothy probably puts up a pretty good fight, but loses in the end.
I just like to point out that Sarah made a puncher with his mind, even though that was unacceptable earlier in the show. Let's move on to the absolute finals. Here we go.
Yes, let's move on.
Entered. Only one can survive. We have Annalise Keating from How to Get Away with Murder versus Jack Griffin from AP Bio versus Rupert the Ripper Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
This is not where I thought we were going to be.
Me neither, but Sarah, why don't you go first?
Okay. I think that Jack Griffin is out of it. I respect that he got here. He got to the final. There's no shame in it, but he's instantly dead, in my opinion. Because you have a murderer and an attorney versus an academic powered by an entire British coven. Mm-hmm. I just, like, even if he is accessing the entire class's help and powers, it's not going to be enough. Mm-hmm. But is Annalise's evident skill at, I don't know, not only killing, but getting away with it? Like, I think part of her power is like intimidation, and she may be fueled by adrenaline and, you know, getting away with murder. But this is Thunderdome. Like, the whole point of it is to murder people. So I'm wondering if she is not somewhat neutralized by the open killiness of the situation. And also, she's not powered by a whole coven. Like, jokes about lawyers aside, I just feel like Giles has more experience defeating evil foes, even when he was getting knocked out, than she does. Like, she actually is the evil foe. So I'm going to say Giles.
I'm working this backwards. What can they do to Giles to neuter his inherent street toughness and his magical knowledge?
Right.
Do they teach any of that in lawyer school?
Probably some of it.
Can Elise Keating make the case to Tina Turner that magic in the finals of Thunderdome is inherently unfair?
Interesting.
You know, it is an affront to the whole Bartertown, you know, way of settling disagreements. You know, there might be something there. I don't think Jack Griffin has the advanced planning ability to, like, steal an ancient book of the dead and figure out how to do it. Like, I don't think his students know enough about that to help him there.
Yeah.
I feel like their help is going to be getting him in there, planting weapons, stuff like that. And I think here at the final levels, that's not going to do the job for him. Mm-hmm. So would an argument about the integrity of the Thunderdome games hold any water to the Muckety Mucks in Bartertown? Granted, it generally isn't a magical sort of thing. It is like, you know, you get your Mel Gibsons in there, mm-hmm. you get your Master Blasters, they get the rusty, you know, swords and clubs, and they just go at it, and one person leaves. But I think inherently you can't say no to somebody if they're going to go into Thunderdome and they have particular talents. So I'm not sure Elise Keating can actually make the legal argument against Giles Rupert's using his magic in the Thunderdome.
Elise Keating and Giles Rupert.
What's that?
You got both their names wrong. Oh.
I don't think Annalise Keating,
Elise Keating
can make the legal
no
argument against Giles using magic in the finals, especially since we've already had two rounds where he's knocked out some people. So we have, you know, some examples in the past to go by. And if that is not legal,
I
don't know what is.
Precedent, as they say.
And I think you could also argue, even if he is sort of restricted from using magic in the final, and it has to be like real mano a mano, hand to hand only, your skills, I think there's still the argument that he could prevail. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I would not make that argument if he does not have the help of magic, but you could.
I mean, she taught us how to get away with one murder and murdered somebody. Maybe she murdered two. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Like, he could build a house out of the skulls of all the people that he's killed and all the monsters that he's vanquished.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, it's true.
I feel like he's got the numbers. He's got the powers. He's got the raw strength if somehow all that other stuff is neutered. So I'm going to go with Giles.
And he's got nationalized health care.
Well, not as That's long it. As he's living in California, but true. I'm going to say something that hasn't really come into play because they weren't matched up against each other is that Annalise Keating and Jack Griffin have advantages that cancel each other out in this one because both of them are teachers with a lot of student acolytes who like do their bidding. And mm-hmm. so in that respect, if that's the biggest advantage that they both have, I mean, Annalise being a little further ahead because of the actual doing a murder part, then they're equally useful or not useful to both of them. And so I think that, as I said, they cancel each other out. I mean, Giles also
has acolytes.
That's
one of
true.
Them is the slayer with super strength. And yeah. the other one, granted, when he had all that magic from the coven, he was fighting a student who had gone rogue, but mm-hmm. she was a very strong Wiccan.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, Giles, like, he's really the total package. Like he's in Thunderdome. He is the total package. He's got the total package. He's got a huge library of skills. I mean, he's got combat training, you know, formal and informal. He's got magic. He's got relative youth on his side. You know, I think he and Jack are probably around the same age, like at the start of both of their shows. But I mean, he's survived this far for a reason, and I think he easily vanquishes both of the others. Although I enjoy the meta-ness of Dave's final closing argument mirroring a closing argument that might be presented by a lawyer. So it's Giles for me as well.
All right. Mm. That means 27 teachers have entered the Thunderdome today. We have 26 empty classrooms, never again to be filled by those teachers because they lie dead on the floor of the Thunderdome. Towering above them is the one, the only, Rupert the Ripper Giles, the victor of TV Teacher Thunderdome.
We don't need another hero. We don't need to know the way home. All we want is life beyond the Thunderdome.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.